slavery and freedom. What is proposed to be done this evening is to offer up some ideas from the in the light of theosophy, not in terms of the academic ideas about the subject, from the point of view of theosophy, which is ancient wisdom. That may be kept in mind, because some of the things that we say does not agree with the academic viewpoint, and you may dispute, but this may be borne in mind. The two cannot be compared. Now, what do we mean by slavery? A few points for contemplation. What do we mean by slavery? Can we say slavery is subjugation of one, or several individuals to the will of another under duress, and impose upon him certain duties like labor and work without adequate compensation, and at a loss of certain basic human rights. So we can call this, generally speaking, what slavery means. There are several forms of slavery. It's like a hydra-headed monster. It takes up many, many forms. If you go back in history, as far back as the recorded history gives us a view of the past, you will find that slavery has always been there. There are slave drivers and there are slaves. And if you read histories of Herodotus, the father of modern history, it makes a very interesting reading. One thing that engages your attention when you read him is that various kingdoms always waged war against one another. Every kingdom had to obtain more wealth, fill its granary and fill its treasury for its own economy, for its own adventures, and it has to obtain what it does not have. So always one kingdom more powerful invading another weaker. And in all this, the victor, the one, the powerful one who wins the war, you'll find in what we see this in histories, expatriates able-bodied men from the vanquished and make them labor in their farms and various other tasks, often under duress. So this is, we see in history, even before Herodotus, whatever times that Herodotus covered, even before that, it was always there. And then we all know of colonialism. Colonialism, we mean by colonialism, we mean, with which probably we'll all agree, means that the more powerful powers, countries with economic and military and other strength colonizing the weaker nations and exploiting them. Now, if you see the colonial history that is in the past, you have seen how powerful European nations colonized poorer and weaker Afro-Asian and Latin American countries and exploited their resources, exploited not only their physical resources, but also the human potential for the benefit of the colonizer, thereby impoverishing the colonized. This is colonialism we all have seen in history. We were colonized and were reduced to a very pathetic condition. And even human resources, in the sense that the local economies were all destroyed. And able-bodied men from the colonized colonies were drafted for war. Millions died. This is colonialism. Is it not a form of slavery? And if you work out what effect it had on the various aspects of our social life, it is devastating, cultural and all that. Now, colonialism is over. Colonized people have fought for freedom and they have obtained freedom. By the beginning of the end of beginning of the last quarter of the 20th century, I think almost all colonized people had been emancipated. So the claim is that obtained political freedom and economic freedom. So we call ourselves free people. But are we really free? Is colonization really over? A little observation in the contemporary world, in the affairs of the nations, international relations, and trade and commerce, and all that. What do we see? We see actual physical colonization by the great powers of the less fortunate or weaker nations. Physical conquest and physical exploitation is over. But what we see now is that it has metamorphosed. The colonialism has become metamorphosed into a subtler form of colonialism in terms of international trade, global economy, international monetary system, to which all of which are skewed in favor of the powerful and to the detriment and less advantages to the weaker. And pursuit by the powerful of geopolitical strategic interest in their favor, manipulating the international politics in their favor. And the effect of this kind of a colonization is felt not only by the educated, but masses of people who otherwise, left to themselves, would be freer and would eke out their own living using their own resources for their own benefit. But you find in this globalized system of trade and commerce and monetary system, which is highly skewed in favor of the rich, the disadvantage of it has a very devastating effect on large number of masses of people. So colonization, we say, is over. It is not over, sir. It has undergone, certainly it has undergone, as you can see, a subtle change and come in another form. Now, there's another form of slavery. There's so many forms of slavery. There's another form of slavery. Racial and color slavery, discrimination. There is discrimination on the basis of color and ethnicity. And they discriminated against or put at a certain stage, and it is one form of slavery. And there's another form of slavery of the same species. Now we have caste system. Don't misunderstand the speaker, because the present day caste system is not the true world dharma of the old ancient wise India. It's not the same. It is a corrupted form of it, and it's become exploitative and subjecting large number of so-called lower castes to great disadvantage and loss of opportunities and regression for the advantage of the more privileged so-called higher castes. If you read Vivekananda, he will describe this in great detail, how this has been a bane of India, which has weakened India. This is peculiar to us. Similarly, so many other cultures will have their own. This is one form of slavery. This is another, yet another form of slavery. Slavery to customs, traditions, social norms, under fear of ostracism. So many examples are there. Even today, at one time in India, you know, going abroad would be ostracized. You cannot cross seven oceans, right? And then when Vivekananda went abroad, he was ostracized. I mean, he was criticized by the orthodoxy, right? But of course, that's not there, but there's another form. The worst form of this kind of a discriminative and unjust exploitative caste system is untouchability, asparsha. It is one of the worst form of slavery. The victims of asparsha are treated less than animals, made slaves. Now look at this paradox. They are slaves, but those who impose this prejudice on the sufferer, is he not also a slave? Yes, he is slave to the misconception. He is a slave to this belief that another human being can be treated like this. Slavery to this belief, slavery to this tradition. Even religious leaders would not like to correct this anomaly, social anomaly. I mean, that's a deep-rooted prejudice. So as long as you are not able to overcome this prejudice, you're a slave to the prejudice. Your slavery to the prejudice leads to slavery of another person, another masses. So this is forms of slavery. And then look at still terrible forms of slavery. We think we are free. Just think of all this. We can give any number of examples. For a short of time, we'll take only a few. Some we have given, one more. Now, I don't know about other countries, but in India, state derives substantial revenue by the sale of intoxicating drinks, liquor, in all villages across the land, plunging millions, hundreds of millions of poor laborers, labor class people into addiction and ruination of their families. Is it not slavery? I and you may not be affected by it, but as see, because we are all so interconnected with each other, we can never be free. Our turn will come when we have to bear the consequences of the misdeed of this kind of a action. Everyone will be able to pay the price for it. So where is freedom? And you have to only see in the poorer families, the labor class people, how the families suffer. So this is one kind of slavery. Now, after having said this, what is freedom from slavery? How do we free ourselves from slavery? That's the question. Now, academic people have some ideas. They argue only from the accepted academic learning of socio-economic philosophy, which is currently in vogue. From that point of view, they will give so many theories, but they're not satisfactory. Why is not satisfactory? Because they do not go to the root of the problem. If slavery is to be abandoned or overcome, I think each individual has to overcome his own slavery to his weaknesses, his shortcomings, his prejudices, his inhuman acts, his irresponsibility, his ignorance. As long as the individuals do not overcome their slavery, there can be no freedom from slavery en masse. That is the basic idea. Now, how are we bound and how can we be free? Look at our own prejudices, our own weaknesses. We are addicted to senses. We are addicted to passions. Desires are normal. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, dharma aviruddha kama. Desire regulated by moral fitness. That's legitimate desire. But today, pursuit of desire and passions has no relevance to dharma. It is personal freedom. It is my personal right, of course, subject to the limitation the state imposes for the proper functioning of the social order. Given that, within that limitation, it is pursuit of one's own self-interest, ambition, aspiration, without regard to the individual's obligation to society, individual's obligation to his neighbors, to the poorer and more less fortunate than himself. So, individual freedom carried to extremes. No, that is the culture today. That is the culture today. No, we have globalized economic system, the economy of every nation is tied up with the economy of every other nation. And the whole globalized economic system is controlled, and the whole idea of nation state and the index of progress to be more and more production of goods and services and consumerism, this is the culture, right? To which all of us are slaves. Now, I think we can use this term, slavery to algorithm. We can call it slavery to algorithm, right? We have a digital economy, digital, everything is digitized, and fast means of communication, and tremendous progress, but we are slaves. Now, the latest technology, artificial intelligence, you create a marvelous thing and become a slave to it. And the most important thing is, this whole system is, you know, the unbridled pursuit of wealth, unbridled pursuit of wealth and self-benefit of nations and individuals has concentrated wealth in a few hands, and 90% of the masses are deprived of opportunities. Now, this is on the visible plane, but the moral effect of it is devastating. I'll read a few excerpts from the Kira Theosophy, how, you know, the truth is universal brotherhood. To us, it looks, you know, sounds very far-fetched thing, very theoretical. It is not so. It is a very, it is the reality of life. The ignorance of it is a problem of the world. Now, if the action of one individual, the results produced by action of one individual were confined to himself alone without any effect on others, the surrounding ambience or other creatures. Yes, the culture of individualism and pursuit of individual, you know, glorification, perfectly ethical. But that's not a fact. Now we come to the deeper aspect of life. What is the reality? No action of any individual is confined to himself. Even thought is action. It is not physical performance is action. Every physical act has thought as the basis. Unless an idea or a thought comes to your mind, right? And a desire arises. Now, thought and desire are twins. When a thought comes, desire is there. A thought without a desire will be dead. What propels thought into action is desire. Desire is the propeller. And thought is the action. Now, when you get up a thought in your mind and desire for something, act is already done. Whether physically done or not is a different thing. This is what Jesus said in the Gospel, according to Matthew. If you look upon a woman with lustful eye, you have already committed adultery. The consequences of which has all-round effect and on you also. Thought is action. If you have any vengeful feeling against another, you have already committed a great violence in thought. Physical violence may not have taken place, but physical violence will follow. Will follow or not at one time or the other. You go on, have this kind of negative thoughts, it will find itself expression in various ways, having ill effect all around. Thought, desire is action. So most of our thoughts being selfish, self-centered, what will happen? The truth and fact is that the thinker, manasic being, and let's remember this, we are very accustomed to think. There is the culture of the times. Science says you are a biological creature. And Darwin says you have risen from the animal. Your ancestor is a monkey. Darwin never said that. But the neo-Darwinist, the followers of Darwin is more Darwinian than Darwin himself. They say we have come from the ape. So that is the idea. It is not so. This is a temple. And the temple is a god. We are gods descended into this tabernacle. So Chomsky speaks of, Vedanta speaks of, manasik, moral, intellectual evolution through experiences gained in embodied life, guided by karma he makes, feeling the effects of karma, and bound by them, and gives rise to repeated reincarnations. So we are undergoing this experience. We are free. As celestial beings, we have descended. If you read Manusmriti, if you read Vishnu Purana, you know what it says? You are a Brahma Manasa Putra. You are a son of a universal mind. You're not of this animal nature at all. You are occupying an animal body. How did this body come into being? Not from the lower animals at all. If we read Manu and Vishnu Purana and Bhagavad Purana in their true sense, if you open up the symbolical meaning in the allegories, you will find the truth. And Chiyotri teaches how to apply the key to unravel the truth in the Puranas, the truth in the Bible. And if you apply the keys to symbolism in the Bible, it opens up stupendous knowledge. For instance, the book of Genesis is a whole evolutionary history of man up to the present time, if you know how to read it. So, in ancient wisdom, human body did not come from animal at all. We know time, otherwise you could have read some excerpts of the secret doctrine. It is a sui generis, right? And I think we must not dwell too much on it, becomes too metaphysical. And when the human form is ready, then comes the true monastic beings descending to it for experience of whole of nature and for the purpose of twin purpose of true experience to know, to understand whole of manifested nature, manifested cosmos in all its aspects, and arrive at thereby self-knowledge and perfection, one object. Second object is, like we are souls, so are less evolved souls in the lower kingdoms of nature, in elemental, mineral, vegetable, animal kingdom. They are also evolved, depend upon man for their higher evolution. So our purpose of coming into incarnate life through for long journey, you know, in India we have the system of pilgrimage, ancient culture of pilgrimage. If you understand, if you read the philosophy of pilgrimage, it is nothing but the teaching, the great sages established in the various pilgrimage centers and appointed this custom of pilgrimage. This is epitomizing the pilgrimage of the soul. It is a beautiful study if you take it up. So it is for this purpose we are here. So our actions are not limited to us. Our actions has great effect on all others for good or ill. Ill if the action is self-centered, selfish. The more ignorant you are of the truth of your being, the more selfish your intent and action and motive will be, and more pronounced retributive karmic action rebounds on you, and you suffer. What is the cause of all this terrible suffering and pain? Not only individual, but also. So, by our wrong or selfish action and irresponsibility, we develop in us more and more of defects, more and more of vices. And that has an effect of creating more of social discord and disharmony, and has an effect of regressive action in the whole of humanity. It is thus we are bound up with all of this. So, if you read Dhammapada, this is what Buddha teaches. If you read Jesus, this is what Jesus teaches. The other day I was going through the gathas of Zen Avesta. What beautiful. This is precisely this is what Zarathustra is speaking of. But we have no ears. Jesus says, they have eyes to see, but they do not see. They have ears to hear, they do not hear. So sunk in ignorance. So, where then is freedom? We are free innately in our true self and nature. We are free. But we have got into material life, material world, and lost the touch with that innate perfection and deluded by matter and material things, karma. And yet the spark of divinity is not altogether lost. When the higher mind incarnates, you know, what we call our mind, brain and all that, you know, which we use, it is only a reflection of the higher mind. The higher mind is so divine. You know, in the Upanishads, you know, it speaks of a tree in which two birds are sitting. One sits on the higher branches and the other, and it's just watching. The second bird is on the lower branches, flitting about and eating this, eating that. It is a beautiful allegorical description of the two souls, two minds that we have. The lower mind is a reflection of the higher, but endowed with reason, endowed with discrimination, endowed with will. On the one side, with which you can save yourself, and the other, karma is pulling you down. If you listen to the voice of karma, the more and more of the higher gets atrophied, and you become an abject being, a curse in the world. But our duty is to control and master, comma, using higher reason, spiritual discrimination, moral sense, knowledge of the true purpose of life, and regulate, control, and master the lower, and purify your karma which to divine compassion. This karma desire is an earthly manifestation of divine compassion. So as we control and transmute it, we become more and more compassionate. That is the purpose of life. That is the true condition of man. So this knowledge is there, is all there in our wonderful heritage. Who teaches them? Who knows them? After knowing them, who practices it? Do we teach our children all this? So in second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says just to say how the slaves that we are. Oh Krishna, he says to the effect that, let me try to recollect, I'm impelled to commit offenses, right? Against my will, as if moved by some secret power. What can I do? What is this? What Krishna says? It is lust. It is lust. It is an enemy of man. Right? It is, as long as you are a slave to this lust, and in the 17th chapter, he says, three gates to hell. Lust, kama, anger, krodha, and covetousness, loba. If you analyze and see, we are slaves to this. As long as we are slave to these, there will be slavery in the world. There will be colonization in the world. There will be misery in the world. As long as the world is in misery, you can never be happy because you are all interconnected. The only salvation, the only way to freedom is to recognize your indissoluble integration or indissoluble union with all life, all humanity. Vasudeva Kutumbakam will not become a mere slogan, but a reality. And only when you work for the good of all, that's what Krishna is teaching in the Bhagavad Gita. Only when you work for the good of all, that should be a primary motive in your life, in all your performance of duties, then your individual interest is automatically taken care of. Then we are nearing the goal of true freedom. This is what Gandhiji called as Swaraj. Swaraj is what, means what? Self-governance. Self-governance is not governance by selfishness. It is governance of higher self, governing by the higher self of the lower self. This is what Krishna says in the fourth chapter, I think. Raise the self by the self. Let not the self be lowered. Let not self to be lowered. And he says, self is a friend of self. Self is also enemy of self. How? Self is the enemy of man who is not self-conquered. There's a problem with us. We say, he is our enemy, that is our enemy, some invaders came and destroyed us. No, sir. No invader came and destroyed us. Before he came, we had destroyed ourselves through this slavery to passions. So raise the self by the self. And self is an enemy of self. Self is also a friend of self. Self is the enemy of self who is not self-conquered. You are your own enemy. This is precisely what Vivekananda has been saying. And one who makes the higher self his guide, As Krishna is saying, I am the charioteer, obey me. Krishna is, Arjuna, he is, the body is the chariot, senses are the horses. We are holding the reins and we do not know how to guide it. Give the rein to Krishna, the chariot. He will guide you. Dependence upon the highest, dependence upon higher law of being, self, swaraj. That is the true way to freedom.